Mr. Alan Shaw from Modern Real 4. Now, you were saying about this Frieda Kurtz. Tell me a bit about the lads. You're looking at a photograph of them now. You've got, you know, what did you have your six friends there? Or
yes, yes, yeah? They were. All here in the...
What were they like? What was he?
Well, this... that's... he was a school teacher. He worked in an office in Liverpool. He nearly knocked my teeth out in a boxing thing one day. He's a school teacher. He was a farmer. And he was worked in an office in Manchester.
So most of them were reasonably bright. You'd expect them to be as well.
Oh, yes, indeed, yeah. In fact, this farmer here, we were lifelong friends, and until unfortunately, like myself, he had a heart attack and died. And he came from Kirby Lonsdale. Unfortunately, he got meningitis, and he wasn't very happy with the people in the room that he was with, one or two rough rucks at the top there. And he asked us if he could join us, and we all remained firm friends.
Was there any bullying? I mean, it sounds like some of them didn't get on, but I mean, was it serious, or was it just...
No, I never had any bullying at all. I used to have my leg pulled an awful lot, you know, with my name, of course. But I just let it ride, and I got on well with them.
Now, what was the boxing? I mean, was that wasn't a fight, that was boxing.
Well, yeah.
Well, there's a difference, isn't there? I mean, it wasn't a dispute.
it was just a bit of a foolery there. we were all having our tea together, and I pinched Johnny's cake, piece of cake, and he said, I'm going to demand the satisfaction for you. So he went to the gym and got a couple of swords out, and stupid things you do in those days. He lunged at each other. Mine went, my sword went into his arm, and his sword went right through my shirt. I used to send my laundry home. My mother wanted to know why I got two holes from my shirt sleeve. So the next minute, he said, right, he said, okay, honest, might be satisfied with Johnny, but I still think you're a villain. So he said, we'll get the gloves on now. And he next year got laid out. But we were all friends, very good friends too.
Anything else about your time at the ITW? I mean, any other aspects of training? you didn't fly at all, did you?
I mean, oh, no flying at all. It was all groundwork and hard work too. A lot of studying to be done.
So what happens next? How long are you there for?
We were there for 6 months.
So that would be until what, April?
April, yes. Mm-hmm.
43.
Yeah.
And anything else you want to tell us about that?
Or they said, you're going to go abroad, overseas, for your training. And they said, as far as I was concerned, the CEO said, would you like to have a go at pilot training? He said, we know you're going to be a navigator, but would you like to just get the feel of it? And so I said, yes. He said, because you'll have to hang on about in Heaton Park for about at least 3 months before you start setting, we send you abroad. So I said, okay, I'll put me down for it. And I went along to Wolverhampton Airport.
Now, is this from?
From.
You didn't move there, you just went over there.
Yes. Oh, incidentally, they did give me a week's leave after my course finished. We all came home for the first time in 6 months.
And then did you go back there, to, or did you go to what was happening at Wolverhampton? Is this the same unit, or is this something different?
Same. Well, those who opted to go on this ETFS thing.
This what?
Initial training, flying training, EFTS. Elementary flying training.
So this was a proper course, is it?
Oh yes, yes indeed. It gave you 12 hours to go solo.
And that's at Wolverhampton?
At Wolverhampton, yes.
And do you know which number it was? Is that in your log?
No, we weren't allowed to.
They don't give you a log, do they? They give you two pages of...
Yeah.
Right, so and you went there in when? What, April?
April.
Of 43.
April, May. Yeah.
April. Yeah. Now, what happened? I mean, what happened when you first got there?
Well, they allocated us to a hut and made it into what they call flights. And then you did basic aircraft movements, first of all, on the ground to check the ailerons, the elevators, and your throttle control and joystick and what have you.
And so you'd be actually in the aircraft, getting the
feeling? Actually in the aircraft, yes. And then the instructor would take you along, put your parachute on, of course, and your flying jacket, and you would be then taken up on a circuit of airfield to get a feel of the aircraft.
So that's the air familiarisation flight, I think they call it.
And then up to six.
Now, what aircraft were you using here?
Tiger Moths.
All the time?
All the time, yes.
Now, what was that first flight like? Because the Tiger Moths are a bit different from the Botha or the other.
You don't take any illegal. You don't take any chances with it. It was very nice. Well strapped in, up to 6,000 feet, and then they put it into a spin, and to see how you reacted to spinning. So they put the stalled aircraft. Then into a spin, pull it out, go, and if you were still alive, they said, okay, next cadet in. Oh, first of all, on the ground, of course, they taught you how to taxi the aircraft as well. Zigzag along.
So you'd actually do that on the ground?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed, yeah. Oh, yes.
So what's the next stage? You've done your air. How did you react to the spin? You were all right, I presume.
Oh, yes, indeed, yes, I was okay. Then the next day, of course, they took me up again. And I said, now you go into a spin now. You do it. And so I did. So I towed it, and I did a circuit. Circuit, and I went into a spin. And pulled out of it nicely.
Do you remember how you did it? Because it's a special way of pulling it. It took them a long time to learn.
Yes, how you do it. You find your stalling speed of your aircraft, which is in a Tiger Moth, is about 55 miles an hour. Takeoff speed about 60 miles an hour. Well, you pull your stick back. So the nose comes up, throttle back, and then you lose speed and lose lift. And then as the plane goes over, you make your decision left or right. So if you're going to the right, I give it hard right rudder and sit down with a stick. And the plane goes right,
start spinning.
Spinning. To get out of it, centralise your controls, centralise your elevator and your rudder, and bring the throttle into control. To get a little bit of speed, boom, up and go, and you're out of it. Get up out of it, get back to the height you started at. As quickly as you possibly can.
Now, can you remember what the controls were in a Tiger Moth and what they all did? Just for people who don't understand, don't we?
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, if I can remember rightly.
And the instruments, you know, what you had in there.
Right. Altimeter. Tachometer, speed limit, speed indicator, turn and bank indicator, and it's got turn and bank, speed.
Artificial horizon, I think you're making the noise.
Artificial horizon.
That's what you were doing anyway.
Yes, got it. And then on your left-hand side, you had your accelerator, for want of a better word.
The throttle.
Your throttle and your choke. And switches off and on. So when you were starting the engine, of course, switches off, turn the prop manually. And then tell the ground crew, switches on. And then he gives it a turn and away you go.
So tell me about the joystick then.
Oh, the joystick's quite simple. Just a simple stick in the middle with a hand grip on it. It wasn't the circular one like a mosquito or a bow fighter. It was just a stick with a little hand grip on it. And you had to be very... You could do it very, very lightly. Very lightly.
Because it's forward and back and sideways as well, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Can you explain it?
Oh, yes, certainly. Right. Now, if you want to do a left turn, you move your stick to the left and move your left foot down to get the...
Now that's onto the what? The rudder.
Rudder, yeah. The turn, you see. The stick, of course, is moving the ailerons.
That's the flaps
on the wings. And then to centralise it, you just bring it back, there, nice and gentle. Or if you want to go up, you just pull the stick back. If you want to go down, push it forward. And it's just a coordination of your feet and your hand.
Now, how did you take to flying?
Very much indeed. I got a letter there to my father, said, this is what I've always wanted to do. And they gave you a little cross-country from Wolverhampton as one of your tests, and you flew from...
Is this before you've done your solo or after?
No, not been. I didn't do the solo.
Right. Okay,
right. By hangs a tail.
Now tell me the cross country story first.
Yes, that was from Wolverhampton to Stafford, and you did it along the railway line.
So you weren't really navigating.
You weren't really navigating. You had a map. You just looked down and saw the mainland. Wolverhampton South, and it was an easy job, but it was an achievement for me the first time.
So the instructor would be in the aircraft with
you? Oh yes, would be, and I flew to Stafford and I flew back.
All on your own?
All on my own.
And what about landing? Tell me about taking off and landing. Do both of them, because they're both quite, they're pretty skillful things.
They are indeed. I put a fear of God on my instructor. On one or two occasions.
Well, tell me about them. Take off and landing. How do you do it?
Well, the main thing is to work your way up gently to your takeoff speed. So you get to about 60 miles an hour in a Tiger Moth, and when you reach that, you've moved the stick forward slightly just to get the tail up. And then, when the tails go up, a bit more speed, and up, and pull the stick back, and then up you go. Making certain your rudder's dead straight, and you're not doing anything so stupid.
So what might be stupid?
I nearly went into the hangars on one occasion in the early days, but I had no trouble at all.
Landing.
Landing, that's the point. Now, I got up to 12 hours, and on my last day, the instructor was very pleased with me. He said, "You've done a perfect takeoff, lovely circuit, and last landing." And he said, "You're going to do it again with both eyes open." And what I'd done, I'd forgotten that he got an error above my head. And he was in the back seat and I was in the front. And he could see my eyes. And he knew I was coming in to land with one eye open and one closed. So hence a perfect landing. So he said, "Now you do it with both eyes open." And I off went and made a perfect landing 10 feet above the ground. Bang. He said, "You're going to be a navigator."
So, I mean, what was wrong with you? Can you just explain this problem? Because I'm not quite sure what it is. Is it lazy eye or what is it?
Lazy eye. Lazy.
So you just can't see through one of them?
I can't see, but they don't see. If you look at it, my eyes will come together and then go apart. So I can fly a plane, I can take it off, I can't land it. And of course I got my comeuppance because I got on very well with my instructor, and one afternoon, it was a beautiful sunny afternoon, and quite hot, and he said, "Why don't you fancy a quick flip shot?" I said, "Yes." So I got in, and I didn't put my flying jacket on. Went up to 6,000 feet, and it was freezing up there. When I came back, came on leave, I got pneumonia, pleurisy, and hemorrhage. Absolutely, like, nearly died.
So this was after you'd been thrown off the course, or
yes, when the course had ended, you see.
So you weren't going to be a pilot, but
no, I knew I wasn't going to be a pilot, but
just had another flight.
Yeah, just had another flight.
And how about? I mean, you can't have a mild attack of pneumonia.
Oh no, I nearly died. It took hold of me when I got home, and blood was pouring out of me. I used to have to put a towel by my bed, and it used to be soaked with blood all the time. And my doctor, came to see me, and he prescribed me with some M and B tablets, which had just come out. And incidentally, my pilot left me a book by a group captain who did some experimental work in the south of England, flying, and he got pneumonia, and they tried the M&B tablets on him.
This is an early form of penicillin, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and it drove me up the wall, absolutely up the wall. Anyhow, very fortunately, they pulled me through all right, but it lost an awful lot of weight, and I'd been desperately ill, and the RAF sent an ambulance for me, and sent me to the RAF hospital at Wilmslow, and I thought I was I'd gone through it. I thought I was in a prison camp. And they'd put me in a ward with air crew who had gone with battle fatigue, and they were in an awful mess. So, on one occasion I tried to escape and they found my uniform, couldn't find my trousers, and went out of the gates at Wormsor Hospital in my greatcoat, the forage cap. The guards saw me walking out with my pyjama trousers underneath, brought me back, and I was in a really terrible state, really. And my mother used to come and visit me, and she used to, she couldn't fathom out what was happening. I was in tears all the time, and it was really a real mess. And
now, what about the state of, what was the state of the others, the bomb happy lads?
Oh yes, they were. One of the things that struck me were they had a fountain with a little pedestal in the grounds, and they were fishing with sink stoppers and things like that. You know, really. Yeah, sorry for them, but anyhow, dear.
But you weren't in any better a state at the time.
No, I wasn't any better at all. And rather funny, on one occasion, my mother came to see me, and
how long were you in? Sorry, I just
about 3 weeks.
So this would be June.
June, yes. And my mother came to see me, and I said, "Don't need to come again. Mom. I'm going to be all right." And she was delighted. It just came back, you know. But I was very weak, and they had me out on in the open air on the bed, or come rain and shine, and anything to get rid. Get my lungs clear and everything. But they pulled me around nicely. But it's rather funny. The food wasn't too bad at all in the hospital. And on one occasion, one evening, the nurse came round and said, "Well, here's your evening meal, Anne." I said, "Hello, what's this?" She said, "What's your favourite? It's tripe." I can't eat tripe. It's terrible. She said, "That's all you've been eating for the last 2 weeks. You've been insisting on it." I said, "No more tripe." But after that, I recovered and I never looked back after that. And then, of course, when I fully expected to go to Canada for my training
as a navigator.
But in Fowler's Whitby, he said, "No, it's South Africa."
So when did you go to South Africa? Is that the next thing?
No, the next thing, yes.
So you were recovering throughout June, mostly?
Yeah.
So when how did you get to South Africa? What, do you remember the ship? Or
Yes, the Orduna.
And what were conditions? Who was going? With a lot of you on board?
Oh, yes. It was... it was the first convoy going through the Mediterranean after the Germans had surrendered in North Africa. So the Suez Canal was open for the first time.
So when would this be? Still June? I'm trying to think.
No, August.
August, right.
August. Set sail on August Bank Holiday. 1943.
So right at the end of August.
Yes, right at the end of August.
Now, what were conditions like on the Orduna?
Terrible.
In what? No. What do you mean?
Well, you were in hammocks. On our mess deck, there would be at least 200 men, and they're in hammocks. And you slung your hammocks one above each above the other, and each below the hammocks was a long mess table, and you took it in terms to be the mess orderly, and you had to go to the cookhouse for the rations each day. And it's...
what was the food like?
Well, by our standards, it was quite good. Not bad at all. We were always hungry, and we took some Italian prisoners on board when we got to the Suez Canal, and they were laughing at us because we were scrambling for raw potatoes which had fallen out of the potato locker. But we all mucked in, and
was there much seasickness aboard? When you started?
And I was lucky. I didn't have much at all, except when we got out into the Atlantic, it got very rough. And they had chutes on the deck. You could be sick in them, see? But I went along on one occasion feeling very, very queasy. Opened the chute, the ship tips, and I got all water back in my face and sick as well. But apart from that, it was only on the one occasion the ship was having a rough time, and I looked up the chap below me, and his hammock was going that way. The chap above me, I'm going the other way. it was very primitive.
What were you doing on board? Did you do any training on board, or were you just passengers, essentially?
They tried to keep the monotony off us. They were giving us classes and...
what, lectures?
Lectures.
And what on?
All sorts of things, you know, what to do in civil life and navigation problems and there's a ship's library, and you could sit around and reread a lot of boredom too.
Now, what about the route? What do you remember? Anyway, did you get ashore anywhere?
No. Oh yes, I did. I got ashore in Mombasa, but only for a brief time. We started off from Liverpool, then up to Greenock, and out into the Atlantic, then down to Gibraltar. Oh, and in Gibraltar, we went on to Algiers, and we stopped there for a little while because the troops were being disembarked because they were going for the invasion of Sicily. And we went from Algiers, we went down to Suez, down the Suez Canal, and rather funny, we were going down the Suez Canal, and there's vegetation on one side of the Suez Canal, and there's no vegetation on the other, so the ships and on one occasion,
listing.
When we got to near to Port Tewfik, there was a girl sunbathing on a high diving board, and you've never seen such a commotion amongst the ship. About the last season, say, move the ship round, move around the ship, keep moving. But then, of course, we went down to the Red Sea, down to Aden. That's a dreadful place.
Why?
Well, the heat. It's absolutely stifling, and it was a bit of a trial there. And then we went off into the Indian Ocean, down to Mombasa.